to Marathon Talk. This radio program is brought to you by the initiative Titi Paunamo.
Welcome to Marathon Talk.
Marathon Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or interfaith relations. Today I've invited Leonard Blocksberg to a Zoom recording for broadcast. Lenny, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Boka Tosh and Arimai.
Professor Leonard Blocksberg has been a lecturer at the University of California and a professor at Michigan State University. He is member and regular service leader at the Progressive Jewish Synagogue Beth Shalom in Auckland. Lenny, I've invited you today to talk a little bit about the symbolism or the meaning of water and the Jewish mikveh, because the Religious Diversity Center has an interreligious calendar every year, and the calendar page for September is a picture of a Jewish mikveh, an ancient place of bathing. Can you tell us more about the mikveh?
So, in the pantheon of religions, if you're studying theology is not the study of each religion. So you don't talk about your religion in theology. You talk about concepts and how they relate to religions in general. In the concept of religions, Judaism is the last of what's called the ancient religions. And everything from Judaism forward is a modern religion. So Christianity and Islam are modern religions. Now, what's really interesting is prior to Judaism, we had a very strong prevalence of religions that were primarily dominated by goddesses, primarily dominated by worship of earth and the nature, the cycles of the natural cycles of nature. And when you read Torah, this connection to the earth really comes through. And this connection to the importance of the cycles of nature. And in the ancient goddess culture, water was an absolutely essential cleansing element. And it had to be moving water. It had to be living water. And so in Judaism, when anything happens that that something needs to be cleansed and rededicated, it is cleansed in water. So you'll read throughout the Old Testament, you'll hear, and when this happens, and you shall cleanse yourself in water, and oftentimes put it, stay outside the camp for 7 days, or put it aside for 7 days, and then cleanse it in water, and it shall be clean. And so the mikvah is part of this, where each of us goes through periods in our life where we are considered unclean. The big ones in the Old Testament, if you look, are contact with blood, contact with death, and contact with infectious disease. Infectious disease is translated as leprosy throughout the Old Testament, and they didn't really have the same medical distinctions that we have today, but what it meant was infectious disease. If you look at the description, they're always talking about if it spreads, then it's a leprosy. If it doesn't spread and it just sits there, then it was just a blemish. It's not a problem.
Okay? So COVID in the time of the Bible would be a leprosy.
Correct. Anything that spreads is a leprosy. It's an infectious disease. And so you had to go through your period of isolation, just like we do with COVID. You had to go through your period of cleansing, which we don't quite do with COVID. And the cleansing was very important. Now, cleanse yourself in water. And the blessing I will read for you, the traditional blessing, Baruch ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam, Asher Kidshanu Asher Kidshanu B'Tavila B'Mayim Hayim. Now, I went to do the standard blessing for many of the commandments. Baruch ata Adonai, praise to you, sovereign of the universe, Eloheinu. Praise to you, divine power, sovereign of every. So, Baruch Ata Adonai is praise to you. And Adonai is the divine power of the universe. Eloheinu, is Eloheinu Melech Ha'olam, is the supreme ruler of everything. Asher Kidshanu, who commands us, B'tevilah, regarding the cleansing, B'mayim, in waters, Chayim, that are living. So this is really fundamentally what we're doing here. Most of the blessings start with the Tivano, who gives us the commandments regarding this and that. So this one is really about the cleansing in water, in living water. And it's very important that it has to be living water.
I remember that in Europe, the mikvahs that I visited, they were always next to a river.
So the water has to be moving and it has to be living. Okay, so you cannot have, you're not supposed to have tank or reservoir water that has been set stagnant. You can have a running flow. You can have a pond as a you can have a pond and with a running flow from it, but you can't have tap water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
otherwise you spread diseases.
No. If the water has to be living. So if you look at the ancient goddess culture, moving water, the flowing waters of the sea, the flowing waters of the rivers, was considered living water. It was a living thing. Still water in a pond does not have the same properties. And this is carried through in the modern, in the Judaism. Is this understanding of water that's moving is living. Now, we might now add some scientific afterthought about what the diseases are in there. And that might have been true, but the ancients considered it living. So if you found a spring bubbling up from the ground, that water was moving and it was living. So traditionally, a mikvah would be placed next to a stream or a river, a spring.
Mm-hmm.
And remember what the things that I said were, why would you go to a mikvah? You've had contact with blood, death, or infectious disease. And in some cases, there was some discussion of certain sins that you might have committed. But the predominant ones that you'll see over and over again in the Old Testament are blood, death, and infectious disease. Now, in general, women with the monthly cycle will be in contact with blood every month. And therefore, women would go to the mikvah every month. Men would go to the mikvah when you went to a funeral, when you served tahara duty, the preparing of a body for funeral. You might go to a mikvah when you have been slaughtering animals for the table. There's blood and death there. You would go to the mikvah anytime you had an illness as part of your recovery process. When you felt better, you would go to the mikvah and wash yourself. And so traditionally, everyone would go to a mikvah.
Including children?
So that I'm unclear about. So in Judaism, age of bar bat mitzvah is the age at which you are responsible for your obligations in the Torah. It is not when you're an adult. It is simply the age when you're responsible. So it's not clear whether, and this could have been culturally different in different groupings, whether a parent could go on behalf of a child, or whether a child could go themselves or with a child. But once you reach the age of bar bat mitzvah, from that age forward, you are responsible for your own duties.
Is that the age of 12, 13? What is the age of a bar mitzvah?
So for girls, the age of bat mitzvah is 12. The age of bar mitzvah is 13.
Okay.
So from the age of 12, a girl would be responsible for saying the blessing and lighting the candles in her home. She would be responsible for going to the mikvah with her monthly cycle. I think most families will probably start it whenever the girl started their cycle, even if they started it at 11. Okay. A boy would be responsible for saying the daily prayers, for hanging a mezuzah on his home, for leading services, for reading Torah from the age of 13.
Lenny, and when you go to the mikveh, are you on your own or are you going with others? How does that work?
Either one. So, in fact, you can go to the mikveh in the wilderness on your own. Any moving water is a mikveh. Mm. And I have done mikveh in the wilderness. A proper mikveh should be done with nothing between you and the water. There should be no clothing, no jewelry, no makeup, no artificial nails, nothing. Just you in direct contact with the living water being cleansed in your simplicity as the divine has made you.
How long do you stay in the mikveh?
As long as you like.
Okay.
So there's not a rule. There are no rules. There are customs, but there are no rules.
Okay.
Now, in a mikveh at a synagogue, you will often have an attendant who will make sure the rules are observed properly. You will often have a plaque on the wall with the proper blessing for you to say. There might be other people present. If you're going for a conversion, there will probably be an attendant there making sure that you completely immerse in the water. So you should immerse so that every part of your body is cleansed. Not one hair is left dry. Okay?
Okay.
And everything should be immersed completely under the water.
Thank you for this explanation about the mikveh. I think that's really interesting. For Christians, it's especially interesting because we talk about Jesus and the living water. So, and it all based, of course, on Judaism.
May I add two things to that?
Yes.
So over the centuries, most men neglect their duties to attend the mikveh in modern times. All but the most extreme Orthodox men no longer attend the mikveh. It's just men can now consider it a woman's thing.
Oh,
there's a real odd, an odd sort of an attitude, since the Torah is very clear that it's not. The other thing is that the concept of baptism is actually an adaptation of the mikveh.
Mm.
So what I think it was John the Baptist did was he took this process of cleansing and brought it as a way of cleansing people going into the new Christianity, into the modern religion.
That's right. And that's why in the beginning, the baptism was always with every Christian. It was the full body was immersed. Whereas today in many Christian, like the Catholics say, we have baptized little children and it's more symbolic. You have the water, you have the water that flows on the head of the child, but you usually don't immerse it like the Coptic Christians, for example.
Right. So in Judaism, we have a different process for the this other partial immersion. So we do this every Friday. We have the ritual washing. And we say, Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Asher Kidshanu B'Mitzvotah V'Tzivanu Al Natilat Yadayim. And so we have part of our normal Shabbat ritual in most Jewish homes will be a pitcher and a bowl where you do the ritual washing, ritual cleansing, and the water has to flow. So you can't dip your hands in the bowl of water. You actually have to pour the water over your hands into the bowl, into the basin. And again, it's a mini mikveh. Cleansing yourself to prepare yourself to be in purity for Shabbat.
That reminds me of a Seder meal that I saw where the rabbi was also washing his hands over water that was flowing on his hands, which we also have during our ceremonies.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's really great. Thank you very much for this explanation, Lenny.
So in a normal Jewish household, everyone does it. It is actually a real insult to the rabbi if only the rabbi does it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. People will talk about how he's a bad rabbi if only the rabbi does it, because a rabbi is a teacher.
Yes.
And of course, it's not the rabbi's job to wash your hands. It's everyone's job to wash their own hands. And so everyone should do it on their own.
And the rabbi should be demonstrating. Pass around the water and everybody pours water on his finger.
In a family situation, yes.
Mm-hmm.
In the synagogue, we leave the pitcher of water on the table and everyone who wants to comes up and does it for themselves. Mm-hmm. In the synagogue, it's such a big crowd that's there that not everyone comes forward and does it, and people will do their own washing in their home.
But it's also, you would have, even if you have 10% of the congregation doing it, it could be seen as on behalf of the whole congregation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's
as great. Long as it's not just the rabbi. If it's just the rabbi, then people will start talking about it. He's not a very good rabbi. He can't be a good teacher if the followers aren't learning.
Yes, the teachers have to make sure that the others are learning it. That's right, and have the practice.
Yes.
Talking about teaching, you are also a teacher of the shofar. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Can you tell us, what is a shofar?
So a shofar is a ram's horn hollowed out to be the original brass instrument of the planet. I mean, this was the first, as far as I'm aware, it's the first brass instrument that was ever played. Possibly the only other contender I know of is the conch shell.
Mm-hmm.
As a similar aged brass instrument. It wasn't until we reached the metal age that we started making brass instruments out of metal. But it's a ram's horn. And if you read the Bible, we have the Battle of Jericho. And They blew the horns and the walls came tumbling down. Well, what were those horns? Those were shofars.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, in the Old Testament, you read about all of the great festival events were heralded by the blowing of the shofar. The shofar called people together and started and completed each of the major festival events. And what survives today is the blowing of the shofar for the High Holy Days, the Yamim Norayim. And there's a special period from Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, to Yom Kippur, the Day of Reckoning, the Day of Atonement. And in this time, so the concept of forgiveness, you have to understand, is very different in Judaism than it is in Christianity. So in Judaism, you are only allowed to ask God for forgiveness for our sins against God. If I have wronged you, I cannot ask God for forgiveness. That's out of the question. I have to apologize to you and ask you for forgiveness. And when I have made amends with you and I have settled things with you and restored the space between you and I, then and I've apologized to you, then I can go to God and say, God, I made a mistake by causing that problem in the first place with Beati. And that was a sin against you by offending one of your beautiful creatures. Okay. I have made it up to Beati and now I wish to ask you for forgiveness. Okay. So this is very important to understand, because we're supposed to, as Jews, make amends for everything as we go throughout the year. But we all know stuff happens and, you know, things get complicated and things fall by the wayside. Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of what's called the Yamim Norayim. It's a period of amnesty where everyone is given amnesty from that period to reflect on their lives, think about what they have done that they're not proud of, what they could have done better, and to go around, and they've got 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur to make amends and get it right before they go before God on Yom Kippur and ask for forgiveness. But what, you may ask, does this have to do with the shofar? So on Rosh Hashanah morning, the gates of repentance open. And legend has it that the longer I hold the Tekiyah Gadolah, So I blow the shofar. That is the opening of the gate. That calls the opening of the gates of heaven. And when I, the longer I hold the Tekiah Gadolah, the long note at the end, the wider the gates open, leaving you more room, to leaving you more room and more spaciousness to be able to let go, forgive, make amends, get things right.
Lenny, does that mean that when you blow the shofar, that means you don't stop, you have one long blow, is that correct?
Right, I will demonstrate that in a moment. And then at the end of Yom Kippur, the longer I hold the final note, the longer the gates hang open for just one more prayer to come through.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this period. And when that closes, you can still make amends. You can still ask for forgiveness. But you're supposed to do it as you go along. And that's normal. And we do that every day. But there's this period of special amnesty. And if you came to me in the Yomim Narayim and said, you know, Leonard, you know, I remember that time when this happened, and I'm really, really sorry about that. I have a special duty to take your apology seriously during this time. But it's a special time. And so this is my shofar. This one actually belongs to the synagogue, Beth Shalom. And it's been sort of entrusted to me, and I've restored it, and I care for it, and I blow it, and I teach people to blow it. And there's a special process in teaching people to blow, because if you look down the mouthpiece here, you'll see that it's a very, let me put my finger next to this so you can see, it's a very small little hole.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to make a noise. And so most people will come to the shofar trying to make a noise. The first lesson is make a noise. Okay. And then you practice that until you can make a decent noise. And then you might practice making some, you might, then in the next lesson, you might learn the numerology. There is a particular pattern and numbers of beats that we do. And the next lesson, we might add some musicality and play ba 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 ba. And how many different notes can you get out of the shofar with this one tiny mouthpiece? Now, if you can get seven, you're doing really well. Okay? I think I've gotten seven on the year. Practiced a lot. And then the next one is breathing. And breathing together in unison. Because on Yom Kippur, when we play as a group, we shroud ourselves in the talit, our prayer shawls. And we can't see each other. And so we have to play by feeling. So to do that, we breathe together until we feel each other. And we don't need to see, we don't need to talk, we just be. The final lesson in blowing the shofar is a meditation, where because this instrument is so difficult to play, when you practice it, you almost always make mistakes. So when you get nervous and go in front of the congregation, there's bound to be mistakes. So what you do is you practice a meditation, where you stop playing the shofar, then you walk away. And you say, to God, I'm not here anymore. You play the shofar, please. I'm letting go. And you leave the room. So what happens is there's this thing where I will go under my prayer shawl and I will play the shofar. And when I emerge, I often look around in bewilderment, wondering where I am, because I wasn't here. It's an interesting process.
So it's God who gives you the breath?
Yes. This is what I teach. I teach this meditation where you completely let go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, once you learn that meditation, then you can get the long breath last to be very long. So there are essentially three blasts plus the Tekiah Gadolah. So the first blast is a Tekiah, which is a single note for nine beats. The second call is Shevarim, which is three notes of three beats each. So it's the same nine counts. The third one is teruah, which is nine notes of one beat. And then the final note, as I mentioned, is the tekiya gadola. Gadola means large. So it's the same note we did the first time, only big. And you play the final note as long as you can.
That's when you have to think of everybody who came to you and said, I need a special consideration when doing this blowing of the shofar. Is that right?
Actually, that's when I clear my mind and think of nothing.
Okay.
I just
taken to God, and God will blow for you.
I let go of everything. There's nothing in my mind. I lose track of everything. I'm just not there. It's a hard thing to explain. But if you've ever done meditation, and you know there's a practice in meditation where you try to think of nothing and clear your mind of everything, and most people think of a white light, and you clear the white light, you clear everything. There's nothing there, and that's where I go when I blow the final note. 10 seconds is considered to be a very good, very long last note.
Lenny, that is really interesting. And so every synagogue has a shofar blower?
Well, every synagogue should be blessed to have a shofar blower.
Yeah.
And there are always synagogues that make other choices or that have to do without for some reason.
Mm.
Okay, that's, I'm not going to say that doesn't exist in the world, but that's considered a big priority holy days.
Yeah.
Is having a shofar blower.
Thank you so much. I could do a whole interview with you just about the shofar. thank you very much for all this insight. And so we're coming to the end of the interview, and I just would like to say a couple of words of what event is coming up in for Titiponamo Study and Joy. And our next event is on the 29th of August with Professor Thomas O'Loughlin and Brother Kieran Finn. We're going to talk about Mary of Nazareth, her sacred life, and her human life. And I think that we will also have a few points that go into Judaism, because Mary was living in a Jewish tradition. So all events are on my website at www.studyjoy.nz. And thank you so much, Lenny, for this interview and for introducing us to some Jewish traditions. Thank you, and kia kaha, and keep safe.
Out there, oh, a peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the